to live righteously. It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's me, Richie T, and I'm joined with Mike Kennedy. Here is how this episode came about. We got an email to contact at theculturalhall.com, which if you're listening to this and you think, I have a great guest that Richie should interview, you can do the same thing. This email was from Emily, who says, Richie, in my neighboring stake, we have one of the descendants of Joseph Smith. He came to our ward to talk about it, and he is awesome. His name is Mike Kennedy, and he even has Lucy's shawl. Well, I talked to him today, and he was interested in being on the show, Emily. So that's how this episode came about.
And I'm glad to be here.
Yes. So tell me about you before we get to, obviously, your descendancy from the Prophet Joseph. Are you yourself a member of the church?
Yes.
Okay.
Not always active myself, but yes.
So let's talk about that for a little bit, can we?
It's kind of a fun story because, you know, I'm Mike Kennedy Jr. to be different than my dad is Mike Kennedy Sr.
And now the name sounds familiar. Is he the one who ran or is running for sort of office?
No, not that. But we have run into each other at Pizza Pie Cafe.
And that's my pizza. No!
We had lunch. He said, I told him, you're the one I get emergency phone calls at 3 a.m. And he said, you're the one I get phone calls to do firesides.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of fun switch off, and we ate together.
And it's a mildly common name. Is there a relation between you and the other Mike Kennedy?
Nope.
Not that you can figure out.
Not that we can
figure out. I mean, back to Adam, probably, but...
Yeah.
So you say kind of an on-again, off-again, on-again with the church. Let's talk about
it. I kind of had a fun little dysfunctional growing up. I got arrested even before I got baptized at age eight.
Good for you.
So it's kind of me and some of my little hoodlum buddies, they were even younger than I was, and I was turning eight and supposed to be getting baptized. We, for quite a few weeks, been busted into a house and been destroying it in a small neighborhood called Harbor Park. It was a house for sale.
Okay.
And no one ever was there, so we learned how to slide the windows open, and we were making a master bedroom out of two bedrooms. And
so just like smashing walls,
painting walls, buckets of paint, and we were just destroying this house.
Okay.
For weeks. And then one time we were so loud the neighbor heard it, so she called the police, and they came in and they arrested us. My other two buddies, one was six, one had just turned seven, and I was turning eight.
Uh-huh.
So they handcuffed me to my friend and my other buddy to his buddy. So all three of us were handcuffed to each other.
That is quite the sight to see.
And then we were sitting outside, and then they hauled us off in the police car down to the Provotown City jail. And
wait, really?
Yep.
That surprised me.
There was a red jail cell there, and there was no walls, and I remember seeing the toilet going, everybody's going to see me when I go to the bathroom. And I knew I was in trouble, And then my buddy's father, that was with me, his father was a policeman but didn't even know. He came walking in, what's my son doing
here? Yeah, why? First of all, why is my son here? Second of all, why is he handcuffed? Yeah.
Yeah, so they used the scare tactics on us pretty well. And then... they called their parents. My parents picked me up, and then, you know, I got in real big trouble. And then my mom says, so do you feel worthy to get baptized? And I was like, no.
You're like, Mom, I need this now more than ever. Forgiveness. Yes.
If I was smart enough, I would have thought that.
Yeah.
But I had to wait quite a few months before I could get baptized when I turned 8 years old.
You eventually did, obviously. Spoiler. Sorry, everyone.
Yep. Joined the church, and I was a good kid. I was a pretty good kid in elementary school. And then they got made fun of, picked on quite a bit. So then...
How come? Looks, size? What was the thing that people found as a vulnerability? Because I was a weirdo. That's what people picked on me for. Like, I took the route in middle school where, like, I couldn't find my way in. We moved between 7th and 8th grade, and I couldn't really find my way in like, the first day or two. all new people. And then I just was like, I don't need them. I'm going to dress weird. And then it was my own protective device of, I'm choosing to be weird so I don't have to be friends with them.
Maybe it was an easy target. I was a nice kid, you know, clean haircut.
Yeah.
My name was Adam.
Mm-hmm.
That's my middle name.
Okay.
And then, you know, they'd always make fun of me. Then junior high came and I got tired of it.
Yeah.
And so I switched my name to Mike, which was my real name.
Yeah.
So from then on, I was Mike Kennedy and hung out with kids I really shouldn't have in drugs. So we were selling drugs and starting junior high and stealing stuff. And that went on all the way through high school. I moved to Alpine.
Did you ever get busted on any of that stuff?
Just shoplifting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just shoplifting.
Yeah.
I mean, no hard drugs.
I was a fast runner. Yeah. When I got busted shoplifting, it wasn't even my parents that brought me up. My parents were out at work, and it was my brother, who always wanted to be a cop, my older brother.
Uh-huh.
And I guess he's done a lot of ride-alongs with this cop that brought me home. And he was like, what are you doing with him? And he's like, yeah, I arrested your brother for shoplifting.
What was it you took?
A bunch of fireworks. A whole bunch of fireworks.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Wouldn't have got busted if my buddies weren't opening bottles of drinks and drinking at them and putting them back.
Sure.
They knew we were all together, and I was in the bathroom, like, figuring out where to put everything. And
let's see.
I put the rockets here. I put the cannons here.
I put the, what are those, whistlers or whatever.
Yep.
Right? That's going to have to fit somewhere weird.
So I took the rap for all of them on that one. Yep.
How dare they?
Yep.
So high school, middle school, high school,
so
drugs
then I moved,
and all that stuff.
I moved to...
At that point, were you still going to church? Like,
we always go to church. You know, that's how it was it back then.
And this is in Utah County, you said, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, in Utah County.
So you go every week because that's
everybody
what you do.
Did. Yeah. I mean, it was funny because we would go to church, and then on weeknights there'd be brawls going on in the neighborhood, and mm-hmm. You know, people in your ward and whatnot, and then Sunday came along, and we were at church.
Yeah, again, back at church.
And my brothers resent the church a lot, some of them. Well, my one brother, Aaron, does, but because a lot of the people that picked him were all members, so
right.
That's how he...
Yeah, he sees it as a group and body of people who were the ones that picked on him.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then there was a few big brawls that went on. I had a brother go to the hospital, that same brother go to the hospital and others. And so my mom said, we're moving.
Got to get you away from this.
We're
bad influence.
So they found this old house in Alpine, Utah, moved there. And I started stealing cars down in this gully and driving around. We'd always put them back at night.
Sure.
We were destroying some houses down there too. I didn't learn my lesson, I guess. And then
was it anger? Why were it just because?
I just had the thoughts that you couldn't be caught. You know, just
okay.
I was a fast kid. I could run.
That invincible youth.
Yes,
yeah.
That's just how it was. And then high school came around. You know, there wasn't as many bad kids, you know, up in America. Now I moved from Provo High to American Fork High. I'm going into my junior year, and not as many bad kids there, and I'm looking for friends. I didn't have any friends. I'm new.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw these two guys, Mike Livingston and Ben Brown. Well, in this case, it was Curtis Kennard and Mike Livingston in class, sitting behind me, two kind of nerds, talking about this TA that was so hot and mm-hmm. how they never kissed a girl before.
Yeah.
And I'm going, I turned around to him, you're 17 years old and you've never kissed a girl? I've never even heard of that.
Yeah.
And so I didn't believe it. And we became friends and started talking. And then they started inviting me to hang out with them. And they met me to another buddy, Ben Brown. And slowly from here, they started turning me around. And then they're going on a mission. So, and I'm like, well, I'm not the best guy, but.
But you're going, I can go.
And I said, you know, I'm going to go on a mission. And that I had to go talk to the bishop. And
give me an idea. What year is that?
So I graduated in 97. So it'd be about 95.
Okay. So this is before the bar was raised as far as missionaries go, right?
The bar was raised right after that.
Yeah.
Right after I got back, I want to say 99 was when the bar mm-hmm. was raised. Right when
it wasn't 99 because I went in 99. Oh. It was a little bit later than
that. Later than that? Okay. Yeah.
But where'd you serve?
I served in Argentina.
Which mission?
Buenos Aires North.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And did that end up being kind of a converting...
You know, I used to always think of my mission, you know, I've done all these things bad. And, you know, even before I had to go talk to the bishop and, you know, you got to wait 6 months or take sacrament.
Did you have to wait?
Well, I didn't have to wait to go on my mission because I did it early enough. Uh-huh. But to take the sacrament and other things, yes.
Yeah.
And then... And then I went on my mission, and then I still didn't forgive myself, you know, for a lot of things. And then on my mission, you know, I got talking on a big travel to a zone conference on the bus saying, well, that's what the atonement's all about. You know, we just got to forgive ourselves. And that was kind of when, and it was even in the MTC where I was like, no, I don't know anybody here. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows me. I can be who I want to be. Right. I can change and be what I want. I even remember in the MTC where we have to learn the discussions and I don't know much. You know, we had scripture study at home, but
right.
That doesn't mean I was listening.
And, yeah, or paying attention or gathered attention. Or, you know, any of it. Or
and so I'm reading the, you know, the Book of Mormon really for my first time, and I stopped the MTC class. Guys, check this out. Did you guys know that Christ came here to the Americas? Look at this. 3:11, guys. Check it.
You know what's so funny, and you don't know this about me. I had that very same experience. I've talked about it here in the Cultural Hall several times before where I'm like, guys, did you know Christ here?
So
here.
the teacher said to me, Elder Kennedy, you will be teaching that every day for the next 2 years.
Uh-huh.
And then about, I want to say a week later, we had the discussions, the charlas, we call them in Spanish, and reading through it. And Peter, James, and John came down to Joseph Smith. And I'm like, we teach this doctrine? When did this happen? And here's the fourth great-grandson of Joseph Smith. And that was when I felt really stupid. Like, here I am, the fourth great-grandson, as the teacher said, and I don't know this.
Yeah.
So then...
Back up real quick. So was it a thing taught in your household? We are descendants and you live to the name. Was there sort of that badge?
Yeah, we were descendants. We all knew, you know, all of us proud of that heritage, but doesn't mean we're...
But I mean, did mom and dad be like, we expect better behavior because you are the fourth great-grandchild of the prophet Joseph?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Curious. Some would have maybe not have done that, but it definitely was emphasized.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So it dawns on you in the MTC, maybe I should...
So there I picked up the Doctrine and Covenants, the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Book of Mormon, started just studying it like crazy because I didn't want to have that dumb feeling. I wanted to know for myself. Nobody knows me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I started doing that all through my mission, in Argentina. Nobody knows my past, so I don't have to be judged. There was no one there that knew me to judge me.
Yeah.
And so I could totally be whatever I want to be and... Served a great mission in Argentina. I loved it to death. You know.
How did you decide what you wanted to be?
As in,
because you get the fresh start, you could have very easily been the, you know, the missionary that we all are thinking in our mind if we served missions. That's like, oh, that guy who, you know, won't stay in his area or, you know, is flirting with the girls or whatever.
I think it was all after talking to my, you know, one to the bishop, you know, and, you know, I'm glad you came to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought I was going to be judged. And Mike, I so expected better of you,
mm-hmm.
you know, but there's so many people in the same situation I was. It's nothing new to them. And they just wanted to help me and bring me out and help me, you know, not just be forgiven, but forgive myself.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of changed a whole lot, I think.
What was the, how was the mission? You said it was great for you. Was it productive as far as finding people to teach?
So hard? I baptized about 52
wow.
people, and it was powerful. It was amazing. I mean, Argentina is a dangerous place, but I love the people so much.
Have you been back?
I want to go back. I want to do a fireside back there. One day I'll get enough money, I can do a fireside
there you go.
Back there. But I got robbed like 4 times.
Yeah, no big deal. No thing. It's no thing.
Yeah, but it was
scary,
a fun,
isn't it?
Oh, I had one. It was called Jose Leon Suarez, but we called it Jose Ladron Suarez, which means thief, ladron. And there, my companion had only like a month to go home before, and he got charged. Why'd they send me here? Am I going to die before I go home? I mean, he was
yes,
just,
elder.
He would just beat up the bed. He would sleep talk and sleep karate. I started recording it because he was like, leave me alone. leave me alone. I know karate. And I'm in the top bunk. Boom, 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 boom. He's just hitting them like, jumping off, turning on the lights. All right, elder.
You're fine.
He thought for sure he was going to die before we went home. But the people just loved us to death there. And I loved them. And yeah, one day I'll be back over there.
You gotta go do a fireside there.
I gotta do some firesides there.
Let's take a break for a second. I want to come back and I want to talk about what you talk about in your firesides and all about this shawl business and kind of rising to the occasion of a name, what that means, and go into that a little bit more. We'll do that in the second block of the Cultural Hall.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Hey everyone, this is Zach Cordell from the Latter-day Saint Nutritionist Podcast and guest on the Cultural Hall in episode 292. I wanted to let you all know about my new book, The Creation Code. In the book, I discuss how to create lasting healthy behaviors using the pattern given in the creation of the world. Now, it's kind of a cool concept of using faith and understanding of the scriptures to make long-lasting behavior changes. The Creation Code will be available in Amazon on December 1st, so be sure to check it out.
Time for the second block of the Cultural Hall. If you love interviews like this, you love the content that you're hearing here in the Cultural Hall, please think about throwing a couple shekels our way. Patreon.com/theculturalhall. Get you part of an exclusive Facebook group, those that are part of the Patreon subscribing members. We have a group, we talk to each other, and you don't get to be a part of it unless you donate some money. As far as that goes, it's patreon.com/theculturalhall, and a huge thanks to all of you who have done that. So, Mike, let me ask you this. Your fireside, is it about being a descendant of the Prophet Joseph?
You know, I use that to get in.
I knew it. It's a hook. It's a shtick. Yes. And then there's more to it.
My firesides are really about temple work.
Okay. What about it? That's broad.
So it's kind of an interesting story where it started from the conversion of my parents. My dad's the convert to the church.
And So is the family line to Joseph Smith through your mother then?
Through my father.
Through your father?
My dad is the third great-grandson of Joseph and Emma.
But not always a member of the church. So he was part of that line that sort of fell away and then came back?
So it was
give me some genealogy right now, Mike.
So the way it started was his grandfather died when his father was like 1 year old.
Okay.
And the new father that married in didn't want religion taught.
Okay.
So that's where it was dropped. The name Joseph Smith never was heard of again. The son, he didn't even know he was a Kennedy until he tried to join the military. This would be my grandfather. Mm-hmm. And then when he joined, they're saying, well, why didn't you show that you were a Kennedy? And he went to mom going, Mom, what's this? Mm-hmm. And she said, well, your father did die when he was 1 year old. So there was nothing ever passed down.
And was it at that point the discovery of like, hey, we've got a line to Joseph Smith? Or how did that come about within the family?
So it first started in Tonopah, Nevada.
In Tonopah?
Tonopah. It's a small mining town.
All good things happen in Tonopah, Nevada.
I mean, if you ever look at a picture of it back in the 70s, it's what it looks like today.
Yeah.
And my mom and dad were both in high school.
Okay.
And some missionaries had skipped through town. They weren't assigned to town, but they were skipped through town for a meeting. And they were knocking doors. They found my mom. Mm-hmm. My mom was going through a Cinderella life, you know, different stepmoms and drugs. She found
herself doing drugs?
Yeah, she was in drugs, alcohol, you name it. Her mom got shot when she was about 9 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and it was by a stepfather, and he came in drunk. They were trying to break up and divorce because of his abuse. And then he came into the accounting office where his mom worked and shot at her aunt and then shot her mom and then shot himself. Mm. And so my mom in high school, pretty messed up. and wanted to know, is there life after death? She asked a biology teacher and said, you know, once you die, that's it. You're put in the ground and that's it. And she was going to take her own life. And then there was a knock at the door, and it was a gentleman looking for her dad, Gene Dodge, and gave him a magazine. It was an Ensign. Mm-hmm. And he said, can you give this to your dad? It talks about where we come from, why we're here, and where we're going. And which kind of stopped her from taking her own life, but gave time for the missionaries that showed up a couple weeks later. And she asked him, is there life after death? Where is my mom? Mm-hmm. And she ended up just stopping drugs, alcohol, you name it, right then, and she got baptized.
Wow.
And then on the other side of town is my dad.
Okay.
Same grade. And he's in high school doing in at school, the history teacher writes on the chalkboard genealogy. Uh-huh. And says, I believe U.S. history has to do with our genealogy. I want you to go into your ancestry and try to find somebody that did something for U.S. history.
Was that teacher a Latter-day Saint?
No.
No. Interesting. No.
In fact, there was probably only a dozen in that whole town, you know, that were even members, because the church didn't really exist except for in the military that stopped
sure.
there.
That not a huge presence of the church in Tonopah, huh?
No. And it's bigger now because I went and visited last year, and it was pretty impressive how they now have a chapel instead of sharing it with another
That's
church.
That's
great.
Or, church is true, see?
Yeah. So then he goes to his dad and says, hey, I got this report. Who do we have? And he said, well, I got this box from my aunt, and there's a guy named Joseph Smith in it, and he started the Mormons. And so my dad started working on his report. And he's at home, and there's a knock at the door, and two guys showed up with the first name Elder.
Uh-huh. You know, why do you guys both have the same first name?
Yeah, well, he thought his dad was just going to chase him off, thinking it was an evangelist or Jehovah Witness
sure.
or whatnot. And anyway, he let him in, but my dad didn't want to listen, so he went off working on his homework, and missionaries doing what they do. Hey, so what you working on? Oh, I'm doing a report on a guy named Joseph Smith.
Uh-huh.
Well, we know a lot about Joseph Smith.
Ears perk up.
Yeah. And he had on the table all the pictures of Joseph Smith's children and journals and other things of the family that was passed down. The shawl. I'm not sure.
So these are actual artifacts that have been
yes.
passed down from the prophet Joseph that he has sprawled out on the table, and the missionaries are like, kind of thing. Yeah.
He said they tried to give him all the discussions right there, like baptism, but my dad didn't really want to be baptized. He'd already been baptized in an evangelist church when he was like, I think he was like 15 years old or something, and he went to go visit his aunts, the one that gave him the box, and others out in Alabama or where it was, and he was at the church, and he had never been baptized, and they said, would Mike Kennedy come up? And so he was coming up to think, hey, this is Mike Kennedy. He's visiting. Say hi to him. No. Pastor pushed a button. Floor opened up. He dropped in a pool. Everybody jumped up. Hallelujah. You've been saved.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that he was interested in getting baptized again anytime.
That is a pretty traumatic baptismal experience for sure.
So then they were trying to give him the discussions. He kept dodging them. And then they asked my mom, Darcy, on the other side, do you know Mike Kennedy? Yes. And he liked her. And could you help us out? So she talked to his mom that worked at the post office. And then she started making him listen. And by this time, graduation had come. And my mom moved closer to the Mormons and went to Rick's College.
Okay.
And then my dad tried to move maybe a little further from the Mormons, but went to Cedar City.
Okay.
The college there. And his dad had once worked there as a photographer. And so he moved out there. And then there was a gentleman named Buddy Youngreen. And he was a gentleman that went around trying to gather the family together and, you know, hey you guys are cousins. Who are Joseph Smith's direct descendants?
The family of Joseph Smith's descendants. Okay.
Yep. And he happened to be at that aunt's house. And he said... And then my dad called his aunt and said, just to let you know, I joined the LDS church or the Mormon church. And she said, I'm sorry to hear that, but there's a gentleman here that may like to hear that. And he said, what's your name? Mike Kennedy. Where do you live? Cedar City. I'm going to come visit you. So he drove from there straight to my dad, knocked on the door, and now I can't even think. What was the prophet's name in 74? Is it?
Not Kimball. It would have been... Hold on. We'll figure this out. Let's do this live as we do, as we talk about this. His name would have been... It's not Harold Beeley.
Heber C. It's Kimball.
Let's see. Hang on. We got this. Wikipedia is going to be our friend. Right. Spencer W. Kimball. That's who it is.
So, and before this, I forgot to mention when my dad was doing his report, that he turned in was how Joseph Smith discovered the state of Utah.
Okay. Okay.
Because, you know, in theory, in Nevada, the founder was Jim Butler. So why not Joseph? All the Mormons live in Utah. So sure. Why can't the founder be Joseph Smith? So
sure.
He wrote how Joseph Smith discovered the state of Utah. And he actually got an A on that report, too.
Interesting. Yes. Public education.
Yes. So now he, Young Green asks him, hey, the prophet would like to meet with you, Spencer W. Kimball. So that's on the way to Ricks College. Uh-huh. So he traveled with him out there. And he met the prophet, and Spencer W. Kimball asked him, what do you know about Joseph Smith?
Well, so he discovered Utah.
I know he discovered the state of Utah. So he grabs Bruce R. McConkie's. So what do you think of this? Well, President, looks like we have a problem here. Do you mind showing and teaching Brother Kennedy here? So he goes and gets his first few lessons from Bruce R. McConkie, goes
wow.
out to Ricks College to asked my mom basically to marry him, and she said, well, I'm not going to marry anybody that's not, I want to marry someone in the temple. And he says, fine, pick one.
Yeah.
And she says, you don't understand, you got to get the priesthood to...
Right. There's some things we got to do before then.
So he goes and talks to his bishop, and he calls my mom and says, hey, not only can we get married, but I can perform the marriage. They gave me they made me a priest. She said, well, you got to have the Melchizedek priesthood to get married in the temple. So he calls the bishop, hey, bishop, you gave me the wrong priesthood.
I love this story.
So
come on, guys, I'm trying to get married here. Help a brother out, please.
So bishop said, well, let me talk to you. We got Bruce R. McConkie on his way out here. Let me talk to him. And Bruce R. McConkie gave special permission for him, since he'd only been a member about 6 months, to get the Melchizedek priesthood. Now, the interesting thing about this part is this is now the very first time the priesthood in our dispensation has been restored in the family. The Melchizedek priesthood, since Joseph Smith, none of his kids or grandkids held the Melchizedek priesthood until my dad.
Interesting.
In 1974.
So from what year until 1974?
So since Joseph's death, when he had
it. No.
Because none of his kids had the priesthood.
Because they stayed with Emma in Nauvoo.
And Joseph Smith III was only 12 when that happened.
So he would have had the Aaronic priesthood.
Yep. And so this is the first time the Melchizedek priesthood in the family.
This history, I'm going to have to look this up. Really, though.
Really.
I'll take your word on it because yes. I don't think that you would go around spouting untruths.
Now, here's the other amazing part about this. Here it is, Joseph Smith, the one that restored the priesthood, so we can be sealed to our families and me to my... I'm a dad of three girls.
Uh-huh.
And my wife, Megan. We use this, but yet Joseph Smith never got to be sealed to his own kids.
Huh.
David was born on the covenant because he was in the womb
right.
at his death, but the other boys and ones that died never were sealed to him and never had their priesthood. So they all had to wait almost 200 years to get the priesthood and be sealed to him. So he had to wait this long amount of time just to use what he restored on the earth.
That is absolutely fascinating to me, because no one had done it previously, obviously.
Nope. Nope.
Huh.
I do have a cousin who's great friends with the family, Gracia Jones. She is the first descendant to come back in the church back in the 50s, and she did do Alexander, who we come from. She did do his name.
Huh.
So that was the only name done.
That had been done.
Yep.
How fascinating. I want to take another break real quick, and when we come back, I want to talk about all the different artifacts, and then we still didn't get to what you talk about really in your fireside.
Yes.
We said temple work, and then we tangentially went off on that. We'll get to all that, and then a few other questions I have for you coming up in the third block. Hey, you guys, I want to talk to you about bestdjinutah.com. Why, that's the company that I have started for doing my DJing weddings and live events. Whatever you need, I am your guy to do it. So whether you're a lifer or a convert to this podcast show, or you just happen to be listening for the first time, if you are in need of a wedding DJ or an MC for your event or just a DJ for your business opening, go to bestdjinutah.com. Now, I know it says Utah, but guess what? If you want me to come to your event and you're not in Utah, I'll do that too. You're going to have to pay for me to be there, but I'm more than willing to do that as well. It's bestdjinutah.com. Emails there, phone numbers there. Would love to hear from you and then help you make your event that much better. Look forward to hearing from you, and thank you for supporting the Cultural Hall podcast. But it's a show. You knew that.
Hey, this is Jake the Computer Boy. Whoops, I meant Computer Guy from PC Laptops in Salt Lake City. You haven't heard me on the radio doing commercials in a long time because I've been learning all the ins and outs of PC Laptops, the company my dad, Dan the Laptop Man, started 21 years ago. I've been working at our corporate headquarters designing and building new computers for you. I design and hand build the new PC Laptops S1 desktop, and it's just $799 with a lifetime warranty. Each one is built to perfection, blazing fast and beautiful, and backed forever with a rock-solid lifetime warranty. And it's only $7.99.
Thanks, Jake. I love you, son. Dan, the Laptop Man here. To make it impossible to resist, we're doing 12-month special financing on any PC Laptops desktop or laptop computer. Have I lost my mind? Call us at 1-877-596-7283 for details, or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com, where we love you!
All right, so the items, and what is your fireside? Which would you like to talk about first?
We can do the items first.
Okay. What's the shawl? Lucy's shawl, that's
so
obviously...
So Lucy's shawl was passed down, I believe, by the aunt also with all the stuff, but it was the shawl that she wore. It's a wool shawl, black and red and different colors on it.
And it's something that you take around with you, so how do you make
sometimes
sure it just doesn't get tattered and worn out and stuff?
We check it in and out for my mom. How's that? Between my mom, me, and sometimes the Brigham Young family. And
So is it sort of a... like a family affair that other people talk about this stuff and
so
show it around?
There's my dad that speaks, mm-hmm. and then me, basically.
Okay.
Then we have some and then Gracia, she's the cousin, the first descendant. She's
right.
kind of the family historian also, and she does Education Week down at BYU sometimes.
Okay.
And then we have another set of cousins in that lived in Nauvoo. Now they're here in Payson, and they sing. Their firesides is a mother son.
Cool
singing group.
So there's a shawl. What else? What else you got?
So we have all the pictures of Joseph Smith's kids and children, journals, especially. So I come through. So we have Joseph and Emma, and Joseph and Emma had 11 kids.
Uh-huh.
Of the 11 kids, only five survived to the age of maturity.
Right.
And of those five, only two have blood posterity to this day.
Okay.
And we have an adopted line through David, that's family, but the blood line is through either Joseph Smith III mm-hmm. or Alexander. So if someone says they're a direct descendant, it has to be between one of those two lines.
Okay.
And Gracia comes through that line. We come through that line. And so my descendancy is Joseph Emma to their son Alexander, and then Alexander had a daughter he named Emma uh-huh. after mom.
Okay.
And then Emma married a William Kennedy, and that's where I get my last name,
okay.
Kennedy.
I was trying to figure out, because I'm like, there's got to be a switch name here somewhere,
yep.
otherwise.
So Emma and William had a son, Roger Alexander, mm-hmm. after grandpa, mm-hmm. who had Roger Allen, who had my dad. Who had
and then
me.
Had you.
Yes.
Interesting. So pictures, a shawl, anything else?
Some vases. I think they had some glass vases I've seen.
And you mentioned journals. Are those things that the church has said, hey, do you mind if we take a picture of that?
So
you'll get this back?
We've given a lot to them. They keep most everything over there because they have freezers that they pretty much put all books, journals, pictures into.
Yeah.
And so they have that. One of the journals that we have that still at our house, though, is the granddaughter, Emma, Emma Kennedy, mm-hmm. and her stories. Because she has a lot of stories she writes of, and poems and stuff she writes of Joseph and Emma. You know, things that she said, you know, she calls them visions or whatnot, that of, I see Joseph as this blonde hair, blue eye, and then writes about him being in his Gethsemane. And
interesting.
Other things. And sometimes I'll share that with in my firesides if I feel that.
Interesting. So why the importance of it? Is it a shtick so you can be able to go around and speak? Is it a calling that you feel from within? Why are you doing all that?
What, the like firesides?
Yeah, why?
You know what? For me, it hits home pretty hard for me because I'm this messed up kid, you know, looking to get back on the right path. And I was able to do it because I had some friends. Mm-hmm. And here you have Joseph Smith's whole family. If you were to say his whole, all of his grandkids, you know, there's even dead and alive, Joseph Smith only has 2,500 grandkids, dead and alive. If you were to take Hiram's, you have 25,000. You know, so there's a huge difference. And so I want to take this family that's struggling, and we're coming back in the church, and we can show you this is how we're doing it. It's through temple work. And when that happens, you have a lot more help on the other side of the veil than when you didn't have anybody. And that's why, you know, a lot of the family was so messed up because there was nobody to help on the Joseph Smith side. You had Joseph Smith.
Yeah.
You had Emma. And Joseph is the president of the last dispensations on the other side of the veil. And
so he's a little preoccupied.
He's doing quite a bit of stuff on the other side. And, you know, and his kids can't help. His grandkids can't help because they have no authority to help. You
right.
know, until all these names got done. Even I remember off my mission, some of the names getting done.
Hmm.
You know, so it's a process. But if you were to take Hiram's side, where all they came out west and all their work was done, all of them are, the whole family is just active and strong in the church. I was counting about a year ago how many direct descendants, how many grandkids does Joseph Smith have that hold the Melchizedek priesthood? How many active?
Mm-hmm.
I could only count 16 of them.
Hmm.
And then one died this year, Bob Smith, Robert Smith. He was the second great-grandson that he converted in about, I think it was about 09.
Hmm.
But he died last year. And so so Joseph Smith has 15 Melchizedek priesthood holders that represent him to hold his name.
Interesting.
And so if I can go out and show, hey, is your family strong? Because everybody's family, the Lord's not a respecter of persons, you know, whether it's Joseph Smith family or the Kennedy family or the Johnson family. Family's struggling, and if they're struggling, this could be why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you do temple work and temple names, I mean, if you think about it, our ancestors on the other side of the veil, they can see Satan.
True.
Anyways, he's there. He's a spirit, and so are they. You know, but now you give them the priesthood. Now you give them power over Satan. They can tell Satan where to go and how to get there. They can protect your family. You know, so temple work isn't about us saving our ancestors and, hey, we did their baptisms, yay, you know, and you can be forgiven and move on. No, it's them coming back and saving Mike Kennedy Jr., who's struggling. And it's about, so my buddy that I talk about, Ben Brown,
mm-hmm.
his fourth grandpa was Benjamin F. Johnson, Joseph Smith's, one of Joseph Smith's best friends.
Hmm.
So Joseph Smith may not have members over here, but he could go to Benjamin F. Johnson on the other side and say, hey, do you mind sending your grandson to mine?
Yeah.
And then boom, help me, changed me.
Do you think it's that deliberate?
I think it is.
I think that's awesome, but I had never considered that until we were sitting here like
most
this.
Most people don't. No, most people don't. Especially temple work. They're doing it because they want to save their family when it's the opposite. They're like dogs on chains back there, and if you let them off that chain, they'll protect you.
Huh.
You know, and then you give them power and authority through the priesthood, and they can use that. I mean, look at Hiram's side of the family.
Sure.
You know, and that's that power that we give them. That's what I share in the firesides of temple work and how that works.
So as you've studied, obviously, the prophet Joseph Smith, then that's got to be pretty cool to be like, yeah, get him, Grandpa. But is there a particular lesson or story or teaching or something that for you has impacted your life the most, or that you found the most curious? Is there a thing that you can share about Joseph Smith that you're just like, this right here?
You know, I think I'm still searching for that. I mean, I've never seen Joseph. I've never felt Joseph. But I want to make him proud.
Yeah.
I want him to know, hey, I'm here for you. You know, I always think, I love the Old Testament. I love to study it, and I love that scripture. There be more that be with us than that be with them. You know, and I believe that's it. We face this world against, you know, members that leave the church and this because they doubt the world and the prophet and the apostles when if they could see the other side of the veil, there are more that be with us, meaning Christ, than be with them, meaning the world. And with it and ongoing, if we could see that, we would have held a lot stronger. You know, and I hope to be that help on, if Joseph needs me on this side. I hope to be that help for somebody's family. Hey, we're struggling. We need help. You know, and temple work is how it is. And there's scriptures that show this is why. You know, we give them the Holy Ghost. We give them the power on the other side of the veil. And they use that and come and protect and help our families.
Have there, because of your genealogical attachment to Joseph Smith, had there been people of other faiths, like the Church at the Temple Lot or the Community of Christ, who have said, hey, we want to talk to you too because of your blood connection?
No, it's more the opposite. They don't like to talk to us. I think they think, okay, you are set in your ways. And, you know, when we go to the RLDS, sometimes they don't like us asking questions. And
because you're going to try and find out more information.
Well,
maybe
it's more because, you know, they don't have a lot of answers of why there's a temple and what we do in the temple.
Okay.
And other things. It's, you know, and so Joseph Smith did build temples. Why? Uh-huh. You know, Joseph Smith III said, you know, I've never had revelation on that, so we're going to leave it as is. And so in the Temple Lot group, their belief was Joseph Smith became a fallen prophet when he talked about polygamy. And so they only believe it till a certain year, and I'm sitting there visiting him, and he says to me, your grandfather was a fallen prophet.
Right.
You know, and so I do face, you know, a lot of those things. And then in the church here is more the opposite. You know, we love Joseph. We love Emma.
Sometimes too much.
Yeah. But it's...
right? Like with their respect, but I hope that you understand that I say that sort of lovingly, jokingly. But there have been a few people where I'm like, but Jesus is in there too, right? Like we love God too, right?
Oh, and yeah. If they were to know Joseph, he was not just the prophet, but he was a friend. Mm-hmm. Of the Saviors. He knew Christ. He saw Christ. He talked to Christ, and they were friends.
Yeah.
And here it is, the whole establishment. But you look today at President Nelson, there's not a difference. He's the prophet. He sees the Savior. He talks with the Savior. The Savior leads the church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what a prophet does. And the apostles strive and travel the world until they get to that point. And that's why they follow Joseph. He had revelation. The easiest things of a father and a son and the Holy Ghost are three separate beings. They're going, mind blown, you
yeah.
know? And here he just, as a young boy, says it. This is how it is. And mm-hmm. Sidney Rigdon just couldn't, why couldn't we have thought of that, you know? But he saw it. Once he saw the things, it was so easy for him to explain it. And that's why we follow the prophet. You know, things change. Things learned and we grow from it.
I've only got just a few short minutes left with you. If the folks in Argentina want to invite you down for a fireside, or anyone would like to hear from you, how's the best way to get in touch with you for something
so
like that?
So my I have an email, and I'm not the best at answering it, but I'm usually my wife does.
Yeah.
Because
being called to repentance.
I'm more of a phone talk, but if you email, I now have it on my phone. So my email is mikek@xmission.com.
Mikek@xmission.com.
But yeah,
people can reach out that way.
I can do groups. I can do,
it's just the letter
K? I mean, I've
K?
Traveled. Yeah. Mike K for K. Kennedy. I've traveled all over San Diego. I've given firesides all over the place, Arkansas, Louisiana, Idaho. We have descendants out in Australia, so I've traveled to Australia talking to them. So I come through Emma Kennedy, and mm-hmm. she had a sister, Ina, that married an Aussie and had 10 kids out in Australia.
So there's a whole lot of family.
There's a whole lot of family
down under.
So I'll travel anywhere because I just feel like my message is important on this is how you can save your family, like we are in the Joseph Smith family.
I love that. And feel like you say with Sidney Rigdon to Joseph, sort of foolish in that I had never really sort of considered that way. Yeah.
And there were so many of those that ha-ha moments that came to Sidney Rigdon. Mm-hmm. And then he later backed out after he really got to know Joseph as an not as educated, and I'm smarter than this man, and yes.
We ask everyone who steps into the Cultural Hall three questions, and so I'll ask those of you right now. First of all, do you have a calling right now, and if so, what is it?
Yes. Well, first off, my very first calling was when I got off my mission. I became the young single adult president. That's
okay.
My first calling.
Nice
now,
work.
Yes. And now I'm in the stake Sunday school secretary.
Okay.
Which I thought it was a fake calling when I first, I'd never even heard of it before.
Right. What is this? Okay.
Yes. So I have a great testimony of the gospel. I love studying the scriptures, and I can answer most questions, but history of the church and stuff for not being active and callings and whatnot. Yeah. You know, I don't have the greatest knowledge on.
Is this for real? Am I being punked right now?
I had to ask the bishop, is this one of those made-up callings when you don't have enough callings?
Second question, if you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
I would love to travel and get firesides around the world. So whatever that calling would be on temple work, that would be my go-to.
That's the ultimate.
That would be the ultimate.
The last question that we ask everyone who steps here into the Cultural Hall is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
Favorite part of my faith? I would have to say studying the scriptures, but in saying that, it doesn't mean just reading the scriptures. It means like I'm really enjoying the saints right now, listening to the saints or the essays or whatnot, because people have all these doubts and leave the church over the Joseph Smith papers or how he saw the vision. But if you read it in its totality, you understand, oh, it makes sense now. It totally makes sense. People have an issue of, what if polygamy comes back? Why did Joseph have polygamy? Well, if you read and study the Old Testament, that's how it always was.
Yeah.
You know, and the world now doesn't have it, but the answer is still in the Old Testament. You know, so there's always answers in the scriptures. So I love the scriptures, whether they be modern day scriptures, all of the Old Testament. I love it. I love to study and know and be able to answer questions.
Awesome. Well, if you've made it this far in the episode, it seems to me that you would like it. So please, if you have not yet subscribed to the Cultural Hall, take a second and subscribe. Never miss an episode. Also, if you really liked it, and again, if you've made it this far, it means we've got something that you're enjoying. Take a second and leave us a review in wherever you're getting this episode, whether it be Apple Podcasts or Google Play or wherever it is. Take a second and let people know, hey, I like listening to the Cultural Hall. Mike, we hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen to this episode this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row.